Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. A lot of people will be talking about Pittsburgh native, former IBF lightweight world boxing champion Paul Spadafora.
Yes, he was apparently attacked by his dog and was fighting for his life in the hospital at last word. You had a picture of him on social media yesterday with a breathing device.
It was shocking.
Yeah, because we think of him as a all-time boxing great in our area, certainly. He's from McKees Rocks, too.
Yeah, he's living, apparently, in Las Vegas and training young fighters. And his wife, Nadine, spoke on behalf of the family. And our own Tamira Rush covered the story.
According to posts on social media, Pittsburgh boxer Paul Spadafora was seriously injured on Tuesday evening. The McKees Rocks native was attacked by his dog and is not able to breathe on his own. One Facebook user wrote, quote, "Please call out to Jesus for this one. This hits deep," end quote. The 49-year-old retired boxer is a former IBF lightweight champion and finished his career with a 49-1-1 record. According to an article published in Boxing Scene, Spadafora has been in recovery, living in the Las Vegas area and teaching boxing. Tamira Rush, News Radio, KDKA.
And late yesterday, his wife believed that he would be able to make a full recovery, though.
Oh, man, is that great news.
Touch and go for a while.
Where did you see that, by the way?
They had an update. Kevin Gorman, you know Kevin,
mm-hmm.
Writes for the Trib.
Okay.
So he was able to reach out and talk to Spadafora's wife.
That's wonderful news. I didn't know that part, so we'll share that with our listeners as we go down the road.
Yeah, and he, by the way, you know, he's had a troubled life at times, too, this arc.
Yeah, I was looking back in 2018. We were doing stories about him had been convicted of something or another it was. I didn't look at the details. And I think, you know what, though, let's think about the recovery right now, right?
Yeah. And
exactly. The fact that he's been in recovery
right.
from addiction
yes.
is also great news.
Yes. And obviously you want to support anyone who's in that situation. Because that's a rough road for a lot of people, and a lot of families are dealing with it on many different levels.
Paul Alexander and I were talking about Spadafora a little bit before I left yesterday, and Paul made the comment, I think it's worth repeating. He said, Spadafora was not known for power in punching, but boy, could he put combinations together like no one else. 5, 6, 7 punches in a short period of time, like within seconds or two. I don't think I would like to fight a guy like that. Well, I wouldn't like to box anyway. Would you?
No.
I don't know how they do it.
A lover, not a fighter. And, you know. But we wish him, obviously, the best and well for his recovery. What else are people talking about?
Well, they're clearing out the encampment downtown on Grant Street next to the interstate. It would be the Parkway East. The announcement was made yesterday that this was going to happen. I found one of the quotes from an official who was speaking about this, said that they wanted to remove a camp only as a last resort. And they had been receiving complaints about this encampment for quite some time. I don't know, close to a year, perhaps. The drug use, gunfire. Of course, we had the garbage that piles up.
Yeah, and
there were people in a nearby building, Fort Pitt Commons, who were concerned about a porta potty that had been placed next near the building, where drug deals, they say, were being made, and the city has stepped in. And here's the other part of it: if you think that they've removed the camp, they have not. They've begun the process of removing it. They're getting the people to leave, so they're giving people the notices that they can't camp there anymore, and then after they're all out of there, I think they have until sometime today or tomorrow, then they start to dismantle the camp. And that's something that takes time because there's danger to the people who are cleaning up the hypodermic needles that are left behind, the syringes.
Yeah, and Marty's been on this story for a long time. He's taken criticism for it too, but it is happening. And apparently what happens is they clean up one encampment and they just move somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
There is a story that's breaking news of sorts that the Biden administration is forgiving $4.5 billion in student debt for over 60,000 public service workers.
Yeah, that's something we're catching up to right now in the newsroom.
This is just the latest round. Now, you know, the president has tried several times on debt relief. He has been stopped by the courts, and nothing is resolved.
But the Supreme Court ruled earlier on in this whole saga that what the Biden administration was trying to do in loan forgiveness was not possible because it's unconstitutional. It's something that the Congress must do. And so the Biden administration has been trying to find workarounds so that they can address so they can accomplish what they want to in little chunks here and there.
My guess,
that's the best way I can put it.
This is, you know, still another way tying it to public service. Now, there has always been a public service loan forgiveness program. For instance, for teachers who are in distressed school districts who spend, it's a considerable amount of time, like 10 years, could seek some relief from loans. But this one, you know, I don't know if it'll end up in court like the others, but this was just announced this morning, actually, 5 a.m. So that'll be the next thing. And if you're someone with college debt, you're listening going, what? Again? Maybe? Yeah. Sort of? So right now, some of those loans are in forbearance because the courts put a stay.
Yes, they did.
On the debt relief. So there's kind of a limbo thing. So we'll bring you some more details on that and other stories. Download the free Odyssey app, AUDACY. Take us with you wherever you go. We'll keep you posted on breaking news, weather updates, Friday Night Lights, football. We got it going here at KDKA. And next weekend, PetFest 24, presented by Subaru, is back October 27th at Rockwell Park in the East End. 9:30 to 4, you can bring your four-legged friends, meet vendors. There's costume parties for your pets. I guess you could wear one, too. Photos with Santa. And you can get details and tickets. Stop by any Subaru dealer for your complimentary tickets. Go to kdkradio.com for details. All right, Paul. So the candidate visitation update. J.D. Vance will be at the Pennsylvanian today.
That's right, at noon. Making remarks, but I don't know if there's going to be a back and forth of any kind.
Yeah, I saw the setup. They showed they had chairs set up. If you've ever been to the Pennsylvania, used to be the old lobby for the train station, and it's a venue that's utilized for weddings and other events, and that's pretty much in the heart of Pittsburgh. And then I would imagine that we had J.D. Vance before. I'm looking at the rundown. So you got Tim Walz was around for a day and a half. You have Donald Trump going to Arnold Palmer Regional Airport Saturday, supposed to speak around 6. And then he's going to go make French fries at a McDonald's. We heard in Philly, but that doesn't seem to make sense. I mean, if he's here and then he's rumored to go to the Steeler game.
Don't know. Odd.
Marty says he's going. He's in.
Meaning what?
Trump's coming to the Steeler game.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Yeah, he confirmed that for us yesterday morning.
Yes, he was adamant because he has people on the inside. Marty.
Yes, he does.
He does. He knows so many people. You talk about a half person from everyone, it's even less for him. So that's what's going on. I'm looking at what's ahead for this is a story. Do you ever look at the Drudge Report?
Not anymore. Yeah, I started out with them back in the day, way back in the day, and then for some reason or another, I just found better places to get information.
Yeah, they kind of went sideways.
But I hear it's gotten super political. He has Trump derangement syndrome, right?
It's changed completely from what it was.
He's like, completely focused on that, which is, you know, he can do what he wants with his site. It's, I'm sure that there's still millions of people that pop in every day.
Oh, I check it not every day. I look once in a while. Occasionally I get a story from it. But one of the stories I did see that I thought was of interest, because so many people look at social media and they see sometimes what they believe to be historical photos, you know, with little caption. Well, apparently, the artificial intelligence abilities have changed, and some of the photos aren't real. And widely shared on social media, black and white shots, a mother and child starving in the Great Depression, an exhausted soldier in Vietnam War, they look like real historic documents.
Wow.
But they were created by artificial intelligence, and researchers fear they are muddying the waters of the real history of many parts of our journey. And there's no way to tell the difference for some people. They just can't. So I guess the heads up, the reason I bring this up is everything you see on social media is something you should question in your own mind. Is this real? Because I've had people, you know, there's a publication called The Onion.
Oh, The Onion cracks me up. Those are some funny writers.
And it's almost like...
But I mean, if you didn't know that was a satirical publication, you might be reading some of those things and thinking they're true.
And people have reported them
as
true. And it's a joke. It's like Mad Magazine.
Right. Andrew Lindberg and I, he's in our newsroom now. He works in the newsroom. Andrew Lindberg and I routinely show each other things from the Onion. And well, we laugh like heck.
I'll tell you what, I'll get a story from The Onion, and we'll make sure that you know it's from The Onion, but it'll give you an idea. It's almost like a Saturday Night Live skit.
I don't know how they've gotten this many people to be that funny in terms of writing, but they have. Hilarious stuff.
My whole point is, anything you see on social media, there's a chance that it's not true.
Yeah, just because it's there doesn't make it correct or true. You're right.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with our anchor man, Paul Rasmussen. Excited to talk to our next guest. Stephen Ray is the executive director of the Block Center for Technology, world famous Carnegie Mellon University. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
You, as you know, are the center of the universe now when it comes to robotics and artificial intelligence. So we thought we'd reach out and get some more insight, because this company worth $3.4 trillion, NVIDIA, is obviously interested in you too. So talk about the cooperative effort looking forward.
Yeah, I think the NVIDIA announcement this past week of Pittsburgh being a technology hub for them, a community hub, partnering Carnegie Mellon and the University of Pittsburgh as well, really demonstrates Pittsburgh's leadership in artificial intelligence, healthcare, and other areas that NVIDIA, you know, the world's largest chip manufacturer for AI and other applications, wants to be involved with. But really does spotlight the role of Carnegie Mellon as a research hub, which has put, you know, the Pittsburgh region at the center of major economic development announcements, job creation, and new technology. You know, CMU has had a role in not only pioneering artificial intelligence, but also promoting a human-centered approach. And I think that's an important part of what NVIDIA is looking for, is how will the technology be used? How do we keep the human in the AI and develop that? Because at CMU, we have people who are experts in AI and national security, sustainable AI and use of AI, and AI safety. And as you mentioned at the beginning, we don't deal with just the latest craze in generative AI, but we're also building out the embodied AI applications like robotics and autonomy. And robotics is particularly, and autonomy are particularly where NVIDIA was interested in partnering with Carnegie Mellon.
Stephen, Paul Rasmussen here. Would you explain to our audience the importance of NVIDIA's position in this, in terms of what they bring to the table, these high-powered chips they're manufacturing?
Yeah, what the they are the leader in the world in the development of these new high-powered chips that are powering the technology that we're all starting to use and seeing. And what they're really looking at here is how are we going to make sure that we're developing the types of chips that are going to power, you know, the new robotic tools that we're developing at Carnegie Mellon for agriculture, for space, for everyday use in the home, and for helping senior citizens and others in their daily lives. You know, NVIDIA brings this technology. What it'll allow us to do at Carnegie Mellon is to have access to their technology and their knowledge so that as we're developing these new tools, developing the research structures that are necessary, we'll have knowledge of the capabilities, access to the technology, and access to their researchers as well in new partnerships.
We're with Steve Ray, Executive Director of the Block Center for Technology at Carnegie Mellon University. I think, Steve, it's kind of an overwhelming subject for us lay people because you hear artificial intelligence and people, you know, it's so broad. In terms of practicality, here in Pittsburgh and the South, you know, Western Pennsylvania region, we offer something that's really important. As I understand it, this technology requires a lot of energy. And obviously, we're sitting on one of the world's largest reserves of natural gas and other ways to power this. Why does it take so much energy to run artificial intelligence?
You may be getting even beyond my knowledge base on that, Larry, but the reality is that computing is an energy-intensive industry, very energy-intensive use. And what it requires are what are called data centers. These are the big buildings full of computers. It's really where the cloud is housed. You know, when we talk about the cloud is housed in lots of huge buildings around the country with thousands of servers, computer servers sitting in there where all the computer processing is happening that allows you to get that instantaneous response whenever you search for something on the internet or run a program that is using cloud computing. That all requires lots of energy. You know, and in Pennsylvania and in southwestern Pennsylvania, we do have an opportunity and an advantage. We have affordable energy. This is an opportunity to take advantage of the energy that's been developed here, including also, you may have seen the news recently about Microsoft partnering with an energy company to reboot Three Mile Island out in the center of the state to help power some of their developing power as well.
Well, it's fascinating, and you know, I'm happy that Pittsburgh seems to be really the focal point of this super emerging technology, particularly at CMU. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. This is exciting because bottom line is if this all goes as planned, it'll bring a lot of jobs and a lot of good jobs and bring people from all over the country here to Pittsburgh, right?
It already is. I'll give you just a small example. Last week, the National Science Foundation brought all of their AI research centers from across the country to Carnegie Mellon, hosted by our AI Center for Social Decision Making. That was an incredible amount of power and knowledge just here at Carnegie Mellon, looking at Pittsburgh as really the center of the universe in this. We do discovery where we have the research and talent. We do development of creating the new tools, programs, and research. And then we do deployment. And, you know, I'm going to add the last piece, which is don't underestimate the use of AI in companies like our finance companies or our healthcare companies or our insurance companies. That's where this stuff really gets used. And we're helping to provide the programs for them, train their employees, and develop new technologies that will help them work. It's going to be great for the Pittsburgh economy.
More to come. Steve Ray, Executive Director of the Block Center for Technology at Carnegie Mellon University. The only thing, though, we got to teach all those people coming from other places, a lot of this is stored in the cloud, not cloud.
I didn't bring my Pittsburgh accent to the conversation.
But, I got you. Great stuff, Steve. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Take care.
Hunters. Joe, I saw the full Hunter supermoon. I guess it's the biggest, brightest supermoon of the year, even between the clouds. It almost looked like a movie scene.
Yeah, I got to see glimpses of it through the clouds last night, but it was very pretty what I could see of it.
So we're going to see more of it tonight as it clears, and we're looking ahead to a really great weekend.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. I'm looking forward to being able to see the comet tonight. I tried last night. There was a little area of clearing, but it wasn't big enough. But if you look at after sunset, about 45 minutes to an hour out to the west, you'll spy Venus, which is a very bright star, if you will, low on the horizon. If you look kind of west of there, or more toward the north, I should say, closer to where the point where the sun went down, and then look up a little bit, that's where you should see it. And again, that's about 45 minutes to an hour after sunset. We finally should have clear skies to see that tonight and the next few nights, because high pressure is building in, and it means nothing but sunshine and a warming trend from now through the weekend.
We got a big Steelers game Sunday night. Now, last time they played on a Sunday 2 weeks ago, we had a hellacious front that brought some heavy, heavy thunderstorms. We're not looking at anything like that this Sunday, are we?
I did warn you about that.
Yes,
did I
you
not?
Did. No, duly noted, and I made sure people knew. Joe told us it would.
No, we'd have no worries of such kind. It'll be very pleasant. I think the kickoff temperature is probably going to be somewhere in the mid-60s after a daytime high of 73. Should be a very comfortable evening with light winds for football.
Hey, Joe, one little question about the nice weather. For people who do some planning along these lines, when does it end? When do we need to get all the good stuff in?
Well, I think there's a front that comes through probably Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday night. Might be a shower with it. That might be our only hope of rain in the next week and a half, 2 weeks. So it's cooler for the back end of next week. But then I think it warms up again for a few days, maybe next weekend and into the early part of the following week.
Oh, keep it coming.
Yeah, man. Thanks for the update.
You're welcome. Have a great one.
Meteorologist Joe Lundberg at AccuWeather's World Headquarters. And check out tonight that Super Hunter Moon. That's Vanessa Williams. You know, they named the moons the Native Americans, and this is the full hunter's moon because presumably you would be able to hunt even after dark because it was so bright. So, Paul, I looked this up.
That by music, by the way, was that from Pocahontas?
Yes, it was. Okay. Very good. Total Recall, Paul. You see that, Aaron? So
actually, that wasn't a recall. That was a serious question.
No, you're right. The first full moon of fall, it's one of four super moons. Hunter's moon is the first moon after September's autumnal equinox adjacent harvest moon. So it's the brightest very, very early, actually this morning at 7:26. The moon will be just below the horizon, and it's the brightest of the year.
Cold-hearted orb that rules the night.
Removes the colors from our sight.
Red is gray and yellow white.
What we decide which is right and which is an illusion. Wow.
My man.
How about that? Moody Blues, 1972. And they knew someday we'd be dealing with artificial intelligence. So the lines are blurred, and so are the colors. But I'm colorblind, so it doesn't matter. From the P.J. Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center. 4 hours ago in our 7 o'clock hour, talking to Rich Fitzgerald, the executive director of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission. He said, hey, Larry, there's a lot of jobs available, thousands of jobs in the region for this last few months and into the new year. And one of those is with UPS, and we're joined by Anissa Zambruna, who is spokesperson for UPS. Good morning. Welcome to KDK.
Good morning, Larry.
Give us the good news.
The good news. Well, UPS is definitely ready to deliver this holiday season, Larry. So with more than 125,000 seasonal job opportunities across the country and in the Pittsburgh area, you know, we're looking for around 2,000 seasonal employees this peak. So we have a national hiring event starting November 1st and Saturday, November 2nd, which is Brown Friday on upsjobs.com. You can apply There are jobs ranging from anywhere from $21 to $25 an hour, along with our referral bonus program that we have. And our referral bonus is anywhere from $250 to $1,000. And any college students, because we get a lot of college students, Larry, that come home for the holiday season at Thanksgiving, and they're looking to work for a couple weeks, make sure that they apply over Thanksgiving break if they want to work at Christmas. But we look forward to this peak season, and we're ready and geared up for sure.
Anissa, Paul Rasmussen here. I've got a question about training. How much training does someone need for one of these seasonal positions?
Usually a few days of training, and we'll have somebody shadow depending on the position, whether it's driving. If it is actual seasonal drivers, we send them away to school for a week, and then they have training when they come back with several weeks with the on-car supervisors. Those are the drivers that are in the brown trucks that go out in the neighborhood. So a little additional training there, obviously, making sure that everybody stays safe out there for the holiday season.
This is good money, $21 to $25 an hour. That's very attractive, I would imagine, for a lot of people.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, UPS has been around for 117 years. I myself started 33 years ago as a loader-unloader in New Stanton, Pennsylvania, in the Pittsburgh area, and here 33 years later. So it's a great deal.
How do you like it so far?
Absolutely love it. The leadership training, all the training, I couldn't ask for a better company to work for.
Anissa, I'm curious to know, out of 100 people who work for you seasonally at UPS, how many wind up staying on?
Yeah, great
like
question.
Like people like you?
Great question. Usually around 30, maybe 30% of that at this point in time. But there are so many opportunities throughout the year nationwide. So if you have flexibility, you know, not only in the Pittsburgh area, obviously I cover Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania, all of Virginia, West Virginia area, and a little bit of Maryland. So, and of course, all over the East Coast and West Coast. So if you're flexible, there's definitely work out there.
All right, go to upsjobs.com.
That is correct.
And see if you can get one of these, snag a job here as we get ready for the holiday season. Anissa, thank you. This is good information.
Absolutely, absolutely. upsjobs.com, and we appreciate the time. And good morning, everybody, and have a good day.
Good luck. Thank you. With UPS, and this is Bruno.
I have a friend, a dear friend for many decades, who did exactly what we heard Anissa telling us, starting out as a loader sorter and then went on to drive and supervise and eventually went into a managerial role. And he has nothing but great things to say about working for that company. And with 2,000 positions open, you would imagine what a great recruiting tool this is. Because if you got 30 out of 100, that means 600 people of that 2,000 are going to stay on with UPS, by her estimate, for the long haul. That's a great way to recruit new talent.
It is. And with the amount of packages being delivered daily to my house, that's job security for somebody.
Well, I see a brown truck in my neighborhood because I'm home in the afternoon every single day, sometimes twice a day.
Well, I'm colorblind, but I do see brown trucks.
And lots of packages.
I see. What color are those Amazon trucks?
The Amazon are kind of a dark blue.
Okay. I knew. There's, and then, let's see, there have been private vehicles that bring stuff. Who else?
Yes, occasionally you'll see someone who's contracting, I think, that's hauling stuff around. So, and then I've got the Postal Service people zipping around in their little trucks as well.
Well, there you go. UPSjobs.com. Go for it. Coming up, Paul, I got a story. Have you ever been to a Thai restaurant?
Yes, I have.
Well, wait till you hear about the Dragon Balls appetizer.
Uh-oh.
Mm. Periodically, we check in with the man who heads up Visit Pittsburgh, Jared Bacher, brought to you by visitpittsburgh.com. If you haven't, you should check out their website. Jared, good morning.
Larry, good morning.
This is going to be weather-wise a tremendous weekend. So Pittsburgh is nearing the peak leaf peeping season. And does that attract people to the region here?
It attracts people to the state for sure. Especially if you get up to the Laurel Highlands in that area, is obviously the closest location to Pittsburgh to really see the leaves changing and really experience the fall. But it's also a sign of the holiday season. And I cannot believe that we're ready to start talking about everything going on in the holidays, but they're right around the corner. There's a lot going on downtown, certainly with the Cultural Trust and everything going on within our theater district.
You know what? I saw, and they did a great thing with the University of Pittsburgh football players where they do an interview with them while they're on the incline going up and down the hill, which I think is really clever. Those inclines, you get a bird's eye view. And then how about the restaurants up there in Mount Washington? I was just at the Lamont for two events here in the last week.
The Lamont is a staple for sure. And funny enough, I was just up at Monterey Bay last night for a dinner for a friend's birthday. Those are such amazing restaurants, and there's everything up there. As you know, there's a new Japanese restaurant. If you haven't been up there yet, definitely check it out. But all across Mount Washington, there's some really great experiences for sure.
And we have become like the microbrew capital of the world. Apparently, it used to be this way in the 1800s, in the early 1900s. Then there was a kind of a quiet, we'll call it a dry period. And then all of a sudden, you've got all this Oktoberfest stuff, and the brews are everywhere.
Absolutely. Did you get down to ride the Ferris wheel on the Clemente Bridge this last couple of weeks?
I didn't, but I'll tell you what, everybody was talking about it. They posted pictures from being on the top, but I was looking from the Lamont down. You know how the bridges are now lit. They're beautiful, the triplets. Roberto Clemente, what do we got?
The Warhol, the Rachel Carson Bridge.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. Yes, it looks. It really looks spectacular.
Oh, absolutely. The city just shines. You know, last night, of course, for breast cancer awareness, the buildings were lit up. It was just remarkable to see the city in its full display. But it is a reminder of how vibrant our downtown area is. So I was speaking about earlier, you know, the trust and everything that's going on within the cultural district. The Broadway series is on again. Hamilton, of course, just closed for, I think, the third or fourth time in Pittsburgh. Nearly sells out every single time. Some amazing shows coming up. You've got Turkey Trot coming up on Thanksgiving Day. The holiday market's coming up. Light Up Night, First Night. There is going to be so much going on downtown, even beyond the Steelers and the Penguins. There's so much going on in the downtown area. It's really exciting. It's the holiday season.
Yeah, and don't forget Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens. That's a little treasure, and they've got something special coming up next week.
Yeah, absolutely. And even there, again, from a holiday perspective, there's both of those places in Oakland, lots going on from a light-up standpoint, something to get out and experience. Also, don't forget about the Botanic Gardens out towards the airport. They do an amazing light installation every year that's so fun for families in particular. There's so much going on out there as well from a holiday perspective. It's really, really exciting.
Read all about it. Visit Pittsburgh.com. Jared Bacher, have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Take care.
And we're going to be in the eyes of the nation again on Sunday. And they have these great, you know, when they show the cities before Sunday night football, which has become the biggest single game of the week in terms of television audience. It's a big deal. And Steelers have had two in the last 3 weeks. And then we'll have Monday night football the following week. So people will get a look at Pittsburgh from around the region. And we'll keep you posted. Roland LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry is with us every Thursday at this time. Doc, good morning.
Good morning, Larry and Paul. How you doing?
Good. Looks like we're going to drop to the mid-30s overnight into tomorrow morning. So this starts for people that have pets. Some of them refuse to go outdoors. Paul, you're a dachshund back in the day.
Oh, Ginger wouldn't set a foot outside the door if she didn't have a coat on when it was cold. Anything like lower than 50 degrees.
Yeah.
So, one kind of a coat or another.
So Sophie in Wexford wants to know, how do I know if my dog needs a coat or boots in the winter, and what type should I consider? Maybe something from Jimmy Choo.
Yeah, there you go. like Paul said, you know, sometimes just watch their behavior. If they're shivering, you know, the short hair breeds, the dachshunds, the chihuahuas, even Great Danes and greyhounds have shorter hair, and they might get real cold in the winter, where the huskies and the long-haired shepherds and the Newfoundlands could care less. They have a blast when it's out there in the cold. So just watch your behavior. If they're older, they have arthritis, or young puppies, I always recommend maybe trying out a coat and some boots on them. If you do get the boots, make sure they're non-slip. and soft at the top so they're easy to put on and off. Make sure they're comfortable, that they're not too tight, and see how they act when you put it on. We have a pit bull that will go outside and pick up one foot, pick up the other foot, doesn't want to put her feet down, and she loves it when we give her a coat and some boots. So just watch her behavior, and I think you'll know.
Dr. Mike Benjamin in Sewickley says he has an older cat that seems to be losing weight, even though she's eating well. What could be the cause?
Yeah, so that always concerns me. When you have an animal that's eating really well and then still losing weight, sometimes they're vomiting. But early in diseases like hyperthyroidism, where a cat will have overactive thyroid gland from a tumor, and it causes their metabolic rate to go way high, so they eat like crazy, but they keep losing weight. They act like sharks sometimes. And early on, that's what they'll do. They'll eat and lose weight. Later on, they'll get real sick, and they can have heart issues and start vomiting. Same with diabetes. Early on in that disease, they can start eating excessively, and it's hard to understand. And same thing with liver disease. So I recommend that he gets that cat to the vet. A simple blood test and urine check will diagnose all those things, and then he can manage them if they have those. It's very simple to manage.
Grace from the North Side wants to know, dear Dr. Mike, my dog seems to limp after lying down for a while. I know the feeling. What should I do to help him?
I know, get up, got to warm up for a while. But same with our dogs. Sometimes as they're getting older, they're starting to get degenerative joint disease. It's part of aging, and maybe that's what's going on. The other things, you know, people are really good when they come in and tell me their dog's limping. Usually the history is this. Yeah, Dr. Mike, we checked over the leg. We checked over the paws. We looked for slivers. We looked for cuts. And we can't find anything. And that's a great thing to do for your pet. Check them over. Feel if there's any heat in the joints, if they're swelling or warmth or something that you think is unusual. And certainly bring them into the vets if you find anything like that or if it's consistent. You know, you consistently see them having trouble. I would recommend a trip to the vets. But sometimes it's just easy things like giving them an orthopedic mattress or giving them a nutraceutical, some joint protectant, you know, a product like Cosequin or Dasequin or U-Move or something that gives them something to lubricate their joints. But see your vet if that continues, because that's something that I can't know unless I put my hands on the animal.
Yeah, no, that's also a potential for you were the first, in fact, the first person in my life that talked about stem cells.
You know, it's funny, in about 20 minutes, I'm giving a stem cell talk to the stem cell board of veterinarians down here in Lexington.
Oh, wow.
And that makes sense. Yeah, so it's something that I'm very passionate about. And stem cells, for the people that don't know, are repair cells. We collect them from the fat, and sometimes we take them from the blood, but mostly I do them from the fat. And there's lots and lots, billions of repair cells in our fat, go figure. And we can move them into joints and give animals tremendous relief. And sometimes a year and a half, and I just had a client tell me her dog's been doing fantastic for 5 years, which always makes me feel fantastic, you know, great.
Hey, so, Dr. Mike, a quick question on stem cells. What's the new thing on that? New treatment ideas?
Well, we're going into, so everybody's heard of osteoarthritis, arthritis and ligament bone injuries, but now we're starting to do neurodegenerative diseases, things like spinal trauma and kidney disease, liver disease, things like that. We're starting to develop protocols for that. So it's really expanding now, which is exciting for me. It doesn't ever get old, and it's using your own repair cells to heal the body. So it's like a biologic repair instead of a pill to just cover up the pain. And I'm all about that.
Yeah, and I know you told us years ago, eventually this will work into human treatments, which obviously it has with great success.
It has, and I think soon you'll start hearing about insurance companies covering it. When I say soon, the next couple of years. It always takes a couple more years after you get the studies through, but truly in the next couple of years we should have coverage. People can get treatments now, but they have to pay for them out of pocket, and then you have to make sure you're getting the right therapy. And it's hard to understand because it's such a blanket term. You know, a stem cell could be embryonic, or it could be an adult stem cell out of fat. I don't use embryonic cells. I only use the dog's own adult stem cells, but that's something that people don't know about, and it's hard to understand that field unless you have somebody that explains it to you.
Well, good luck with your speech today. Break a lip, and safe travels home.
You could do stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
Most people ask me to sit down, but that's another story. Thanks, Doc.
All right, thank you. Have a great day.
All right, go to animalgeneral.net. We have a link at kdkradio.com.
Larry, where else can a listener go and hear at one point something about Dragon Balls and then moving on to stem cell therapy for pets?
Do not be confused. That conversation did not cross into Dr. Mike's vector. At 8 o'clock with Paul Rasmussen, broadcast legend, Hall of Famer, Bill Hillgrove. Talk about how about the perfect Panthers being 6-0?
Did you hear about Pat Narduzzi, by the way?
Yeah, he's on that Bear Bryant watch list for Coach of the Year.
I didn't know they had such a thing as a watch list for an award for a coach at the end of the year, but that's still cool.
It is, and they continue to get the accolades from around the region. They've got defensive linemen of the week in the ACC, Jimmy Scott. They've got specialist in Ben Sauls. They got a new thing they say about it. You know that Just Call Saul? Or isn't that a show?
Just Call Saul, yeah.
Well, they just call Ben Sauls anytime you need 3 points. He kicked a 58-yard field goal against California last week, which ended up being the difference in the game. So, yeah, Panthers are 6-0. Bill Hillgrove will talk to us about that. And they have an off Saturday, but they're playing next Thursday at Acrisure against Syracuse.
You know, for an offense, a guy who can kick a 58-yard field goal, for an offense, that gives you such confidence.
Yeah, Coach Narduzzi will not argue that. And then after the Thursday game, then they have another Saturday off, obviously. And then they go to Dallas, play SMU, one of the new members of the ACC. So we'll see where it goes. It's an exciting time. Well, also, we got to ask Bill Hillgrove, Russell Wilson or Justin Fields Sunday night?
Looks like Russell, right?
Who's the starting quarterback for the Steelers? Bill might know. He, like Marty, has people.
One would think so.
He's got people.
16 on the huddle clock. Now they overload the left side. Trips outside the numbers. And they give it to Desmond. He's on his way up the right sideline. 50, 40, 30, 25, 25. Touchdown, Desmond Reed.
College football and the University of Pittsburgh is perfect. The Panthers are 6-0, and you just heard the voice of the Panthers, Bill Hillgrove, Hall of Famer, broadcast legend, our partner. And you can see Bill on the radio via our video at kdkradio.com. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Larry. Yeah, that was quite I think the execution of that play was perfect, because what they did was bring the tight end, I think two of them, plus a receiver from the right side, which was the wide side, to the short side on 4th and 1. And I guess, you know, the California defensive players are thinking they're going to try to draw us offside. And bang, they snap the ball, and he goes against the grain to the wide side where they didn't have numbers, and he doesn't lose any foot races. That was something to watch.
There was no question. Once he crossed the line, he was gone. And they survived by a missed field goal. They would have had 2 minutes left, would have been down by a point, but the field goal was no good from 40 for the California Golden Bears, so the Panthers survive and remain perfect. Little oddity this season with scheduling, Bill. As you know, there's 3 Saturdays where Pitt will not be playing. This is the second Saturday. Then they have Thursday night at home against Syracuse. And then, because of that, they'll have another Saturday where they're not playing football. So a little oddity in an off week, but it always helps a team, especially when you're right at the halfway point of the regular season, to get healthy.
By university is always a high point in your schedule. And so that can only help, especially, you know, since they had the left guard and starting left tackle injured, gives them more time to try to get back. In the meantime, their depth was tested. And I think the lesson learned in that Cal game, as you get into the meat of the ACC schedule, everything is going to be a dogfight. And don't expect anything else. I look at Syracuse numbers. Kyle McCord, the transfer from Ohio State, a fine quarterback. LaQuint Allen Jr., their running back, almost 5 yards a carry. They can score points. They also, on defense, Larry, two things to note. Number one, red zone touchdowns. They're less than 50% for the opposition. So they get tough in the red zone. And what was the other thing that I wanted to bring up? Oh, yeah, 30% on third downs, which is near the top of the conference. So, you know, they're going to be a handful.
A good team finds a way to win when things don't go your way. For the first time, this offense that is averaging almost 500 yards a game was not the same offense we had seen with Eli Holstein. For the first time, not getting accolades from the ACC.
Give Cal a lot of credit. Their defense is probably better than most people think. How they lost that Miami game, you scratch your head. But that's college football, and you know, forget the history, forget the stats. You know, every game takes on its own life, and that took on a very dramatic life, and fortunately the Panthers emerged victorious.
So again, an off week for Pitt next Thursday at Acrisure. It's Syracuse. This is the one team they've played consistently since the 50s, year in and year out. And Paul, I'll let you ask Bill the number one question in this city.
Mike Tomlin tipped his hand a little bit on Tuesday, and then we found out yesterday that Russell Wilson took the first snaps at practice. Who's the Steeler starter on Sunday?
Well, there's a reason that Russell has the C on his jersey. And I believe, and I don't know this for a fact, but I think he came here as damaged goods. And I think that, you know, calf injury with the sled and all that, I don't buy into that. But he's finally healthy. And I think even at age 36, as you get into the meat of the schedule, and let's face it, you know, this schedule backloaded with division games, and I think those are the ones you have to win. I think he's the answer. Now, I could be wrong. I think Justin Fields has done an exemplary job. And you know what? I think maybe part of the solution, I can see Arthur Smith using Justin in the red zone, and I'll tell you why. You know, you're going to have a spy on you. If you don't, if he gets loose, he's in the end zone, and we saw that last week. So I think with teams having to put a spy on him, that's one less receiver that's covered or double covered, and I think that could be Washington's. We'll wait and see.
And the Jets are improved in some ways. They had their coach fired. Aaron Rodgers is their quarterback. He just got a familiar receiver who's supposed to be healthy and really good. So how do you see the matchup Sunday night with the New York Jets?
I was surprised that the Jets are a slight favorite. But, you know, despite their travails, they're a pretty good football team. How much Devontae can get on the same page with Aaron, you know, they're old buddies. Maybe they won't take long. I don't know that that'll be the key matchup in the game, but I think it'll be a good one, and I think, you know, it'll be another dogfight. So it'll be fun to watch, that's for sure. Russell Wilson is an excellent play-action quarterback, and I think that plays into the hands of what the Steelers try to do with Najee and, you know, and the running game. So I think that'll be something to keep your eye on.
And, Bill, how about the oddity of having two Sunday night games at home within 3 weeks and then – Monday night football at home next week.
Makes for long days for Steelers fans, but I give them credit. They show up, and they showed up in Vegas last Sunday. Wow. To the point where you saw the end of the game when Mike Tomlin bowed to the crowd like, thank you, thank you, thank you. They were a factor and a good factor and a help for the Steelers. So the Steelers Nation never fails to surprise.
Yeah, Coach Tomlin even tipped his cap. Here's what he said Tuesday about the fans.
Man, what do you say about that support that we had in Vegas? Steeler Nation is special. We don't take it for granted, man. We really appreciate it. Not only in terms of the support, in terms of attendance and the crowd noise and so forth in play, but I just thought it was really cool 20, 30 minutes after the game when we were going through the arena on our way to our buses, man, a lot of Steeler Nation was still in the stands and cheering for us and so forth as we were going to our buses. And so that relationship is a real thing.
And the atmosphere will be electric Sunday night at Acrisure. And Bill, before you go, Paul, Monday night, Bill received for the third time from the Saints and Sinners organization the Man of the Year Award. Bill, you're having a year. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. And Larry, you were excellent, and that was a fine program. And I thank the Circus Saints and Sinners, Bob Prince Tent. They put on a first-class show.
And we want to help the charity that's close to your heart. It's coming up here in weeks, right?
Yeah, we got Santa's Kids, and AFTRA will honor me tonight at the Buy-In with their annual spoof. You know, they put on a nice show with all the local broadcasters. And so I'll be there, and, you know, I guess when you get a lot of awards, it's a sign of your age.
That's tremendous.
You stick around long enough, people notice you, you know.
Off the record, that is the annual event that all the local, they got media people, they got politicians, and yeah, you're going to be part of the show. You are part of the show.
I think so.
Well,
unfortunately.
Have fun tonight,
partner. They'll probably make a little fun of me, but that's fine. all bets are off.
It's all good. The fact that you're the one that told Newt Rockne to go ahead, throw the ball. You know, a lot of people don't know that. All right, Billy, have fun tonight.
Thank you, gentlemen. Always great to be with you. H2P.
Bill Hillgrove. Big K Morning Show every Thursday. We welcome via video on the radio. KDKRadio.com, by the way, to check out Christy Graber, food editor with Pittsburgh Magazine. Christy, good morning. You're sun splashed, I can see.
I know. I don't know what's happening here. Usually my place is really dark. But
yeah, we're going to have a great stretch of weather. So the weekend is upon us, and you have seven things to do in Pittsburgh this weekend.
This weekend, that's a lot. October is going by really fast, so check out our list of spooky things to do in Pittsburgh this weekend. Events include horror movies at Row House Cinema in Lawrenceville, including the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which celebrates its 50th anniversary this year. There's also WYEP's Hellbender Ball, where the city's best musicians perform full sets of some of their favorite artists, like Fleetwood Mac. You could also see Sweeney Todd on stage at the Strand Theater in Zilly. And the sibling band Hanson, do you remember M-Bop? They play the Roxy in theater.
Yeah.
And the brothers are in their 40s now. So that's pretty scary to think of.
Yeah, they're doing, two nights, too?
Yeah, that's...
that's scary in and of itself. I get it. So, the heartwarming story of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, again, at the Row House Cinema in Lawrenceville. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Mancini's Bread.
This is a family I really love. Mancini's Bakery just unveiled its latest bread art masterpiece, and it's an ode to Beetlejuice. So bakery co-owner Nick Mancini Hartner spent a lot of time creating this toast with the most. It's 4x4 feet, and it weighs 140 pounds. You could see it at Mancini's Strip District location through Halloween or until it starts to crumble, because it is bread. He kind of bathes it in olive oil every now and then, but it won't last long. So his art is fleeting, but it's really good.
Yeah, Mancini's, that's one of those iconic things of the Berg. All right, this week in Pittsburgh history.
Another, Pittsburgher doing well, getting big accolades. On October 16th, 2005, 14 days after the death of American playwright and Pittsburgh native August Wilson, the Virginia Theater on Broadway was renamed the August Wilson Theater. The New York City Theater marks the first Broadway theater to be named for an African-American. Wilson made his Broadway debut as a playwright with Ma Rainey's Black Bottom in 1984. His best-known work is Fences, which received 4 of the 6 Tony Awards it was nominated for in 1987. He also won a Pulitzer Prize for the play. In Pittsburgh, his childhood home and the August Wilson African-American Cultural Center memorialize his legacy. So he's still making an impact on Pittsburgh today.
You know, when Fences came out, I had a TV show on KDKA, and the producer said, "Hey, we booked August Wilson." And I was like, "Who's that?" Not knowing, he was in studio, and I was sitting next to this legend to be. And what I do remember from sitting down with August Wilson was just how genuine and gentle and humble he was. Yet his stories are very, very powerful. So yes. Check that out. It's all right there. PittsburghMagazine.com. Christy Graver, where are you going to be this weekend? What do you do?
I'm going to get pumpkins this weekend. I think we're going to go out to Yek's Farm. It's out kind of like in Beaver County. It's a really small little place, but it's really cute. So we need to get pumpkins.
Well, Mother Nature is going to cooperate. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Have a great weekend.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Larry.
Food editor Christy Graver.
As we mentioned in our 8:30 update, an independent panel is recommending a complete restructuring of the Secret Service. This is related to the Butler rally assassination attempt. We've just received a CBS News special report.
CBS News special report, scathing findings on the Secret Service and the failed assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump at a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania in July. Correspondent Nicole Skanga is in Washington.
An independent panel appointed by Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas identified what it called systemic issues within the U.S. Secret Service and said without fundamental reform, it believes another Butler can and will happen.
President Biden ordered the bipartisan group to conduct its review, and members are calling for a shakeup.
Among the panel's recommendations, to appoint new leadership from outside the Secret Service and a restructuring of the agency, refocusing operations and personnel around its presidential protective mission.
The agency's leaders have acknowledged they were notified about the gunman before he pulled his trigger. CBS News special report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
That's an eye-opener there, Larry. They're calling for a shakeup at Secret Service. This is much more than we've heard in previous evaluations and reports.
Well, we knew there were communication failures, but for them to suggest they need to make sweeping reforms, maybe it was more than we expected, but 52 pages. We'll have more details coming up on News Radio KDKA. Meanwhile, we have some news about Nippon Steel and U.S. Steel. Pittsburgh Business Times reporter Paul Goff reported that Nippon Steel will sell its joint venture in an Alabama steelmaking plant to a partner. And here to talk about what could be next is Phil Kirpin, President of America Commitment and Unleash Prosperity. Phil, welcome to KDKA.
Hey, my pleasure.
So what is the meaning of this development? Is this a dead deal long-term? They just spinning their wheels, or is there a chance after the election that they might find a way to make it happen?
Well, it's interesting because they've run into massive political resistance on both sides of the aisle. And normally when that happens, you don't have much of a path to success. But the economic case for this merger is very compelling. And so you've got a situation where, you know, one of the major steel producers in the world thinks this is the right strategy for us. It's the right way for us to get really world-class workers that we can combine with our technology and our know-how and our capital and really compete with China, that's trying to dominate the world steel market. And the fact that they're willing now to divest their Alabama plant, the big joint venture they have there, I think it's interesting. I think it's a big vote of confidence, actually, for Pennsylvania steel workers as opposed to, you know, U.S. steel workers more generally. They think that where they can really, really make their mark in the world steel market is, moving into your region. And they're even willing to give up the foothold they have in the U.S. market down in Alabama if that can move the approval forward. And so, look, the politics are still challenging, but, you know, they think this is the right business strategy, and they're committed to trying to do whatever they can to make it move forward. I think it's another vote of confidence in sort of the compelling economics of the deal, and whether that overcomes the political opposition, I don't know. But maybe when we get past, to your point, when we get past the election and things are a little less politically dominated, the economic merits of the deal may get it through.
Yeah, the carrot they've dangled here is, hey, we'll keep the headquarters in Pittsburgh and we'll dump $1 billion into the Mon Valley Works. So I know that people have said, well, that's just press release and rhetoric. However, let's say that is the case and they hold them to it. I'm not sure why the steelworkers would be against that, because what's the alternative?
Well, I mean, the alternative is that there's a fire sale acquisition by Cleveland Cliffs, and they basically strip U.S. Steel for its assets and probably shut down most of its facilities. And, you know, I think the union leadership really likes this idea of one big steel company, Cleveland Cliffs, and we can negotiate with them, and we can kind of just set all our sights basically on one company. I think the leadership likes that. It's terrible for the rank and file workers, though. It really, the logic of sort of a fire sale deal when you have kind of a premium price being offered and all of these commitments in terms of investments and keeping the headquarters and everything else, the Nippon offer is a much, much better offer than what Cleveland Cliffs has on the table. It's better for the workers. It's much better for the shareholders. It's, you know, it's night and day. I mean, the only issue, of course, is, you know, they're an investor-owned company. They're not a government-owned company, but, you know, they're headquartered in a foreign country. So this is why there's been so much hesitation. But you look at what Japanese companies have done in the auto industry. It's been hugely positive for the communities that have had them there. And Japan's one of our closest allies. This is the thing I don't get about this whole, you know, oh, no, it's a foreign. Well, they want to do this because they want to take on China. They want to do this because they're allied with us against our actual geostrategic, you know, opponent when it comes to, you know, the military implications and everything like that. And, you know, if, you know, I know the world changes and maybe someday Japan won't be our friend anymore. So, okay, but that's when you step in and do something with the national security laws. You don't do it, you know, at a time where it doesn't make any sense. And so I think the logic of the deal is very compelling. And the fact that they're now willing to give up the U.S. plant that they already have in Alabama tells you that, you know, they really, they're not blowing smoke. They really want those workers. They really see a lot of value there that they think they can unlock.
Phil Kirpin, President of America Commitment and Unleashed Property or Prosperity, thank you for the update. And we'll obviously be following this story. And the big, big news will probably come after the election. You're right. Thanks so much, Phil.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
Dower, the details behind this really amazing esplanade, this development that's going to be on the Ohio River past Rivers Casino. And we'll talk to the man behind it all, Lucas Pyatt. In the meantime, Paul Rasmussen has brought to light this report, an independent panel investigating the attempted assassination of Donald Trump in Butler, July 13th, a 52-page report.
And it echoes the previous reports that talk about securing the building that had the clear line of sight to where Trump was speaking, and then the communications problems and the ability of the Secret Service and local law enforcement to talk to each other, just basically talk back and forth.
And the panel faulted the planning between Secret Service and local law enforcement and said the Secret Service failed to ask what was being done to secure the building, and also cited the fact that there were no two separate command posts, creating a divide of the flow of communications.
And then they went into the Secret Service culture. They painted a picture of an agency struggling to think critically about how it carries out its mission, especially when it comes to protecting Trump.
And the panel said agency personnel operated under the assumption that they effectively had to do more with less. The report said the additional security measures taken to protect Trump after the Butler shooting should have been taken before.
There was also a back and forth, they say, between the Trump security detail and Secret Service headquarters about how many people were needed to protect the former president.
They also faulted some of the senior-level staff who were involved in the rally for what they called a, quote, lack of ownership. In one example, the panel said a senior agent tasked with coordinating communications didn't walk around the rally site ahead of time and did not brief the state police counterpart before the rally or how communications would be managed. It cited the relative inexperience of two agents who played a role in security July 13th.
And so the panel has concluded, Larry, that the Secret Service needs new outside leadership,
talk about
a renewed focus on its core protective mission, and the panel also expressed skepticism that the agency should continue with the investigations it currently conducts.
Pyatt Companies.
And
Lucas,
the panel was
Pyatt,
made up of
Mark back
Phillip,
to KDK, Lucas,
Deputy
Attorney General under President George W.
Here. Good morning, Larry.
David
How are you?
Mitchell, I'm good. I know you're
many
excited
state
about
and local law enforcement roles in Maryland and Delaware.
Janet
the making, and I know
Homeland
COVID
Security
and all the things you've overcome, all these obstacles. But tell us about Esplanade coming up.
Yeah, long time is an understatement. It's been about 8 years now we've been working for this project, and
super excited to be making that progress and getting it through the planning commission and making the project fully entitled so we can break ground in the spring. We just had our hearing, our briefing this week, and then next week we'll have our second briefing, and then we'll have hearing and action in November that will move the project forward on the master development plan side.
Yeah, and so for people, you know, to find out exactly where this will take place, it's what, nearly 15 acres on the Ohio River, not far from Rivers Casino, right?
Yeah, it's right next to the West End Bridge, and it's kind of a blighted area in a neighborhood called Chateau. And it's really a transformative project that will remake the riverfront in that area and also do a lot of great things for Manchester, for reconnecting that community back to the riverfront and just creating lots of jobs and lots of economic impact and, you know, making Pittsburgh a little bit cooler, right? That's the deal.
So obviously there's construction job opportunities. There's going to be as mixed use places, new places for people to live. Give us some of the highlights, and I'm looking at a rendering that you have on your website. Pretty fantastic. Yeah. 1,600 feet of riverfront frontage, 300 apartments. Give us some more highlights.
Totally transformative. I think most of your listeners know that we're planning on doing the largest Ferris wheel here. I know we just had one recently on the bridge, but we're actually going to bring in something that's maybe 5-6 times as large as that. It will be over 200 feet overlooking the river, overlooking Heinz Field, and back towards the city and up the Ohio River. It'd be a really great beacon for the project. And, you know, the real reason we're doing that is because of the innovation of that wheel was invented, and Ferris lived and died in the north side. So we should have something that pays homage to that innovation. We have an upwards of 300 apartments that will be both market rate and affordable. We have a luxury condominium building, which will be right on the river. We're going to totally improve the trail, that wonderful asset along the river that goes all the way from Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C., and really become the hub and the end point for that as well. Marina, houseboats where you could live aboard and you can Airbnb them. You could come down for Steeler games and live right on the river on your own houseboat, which would be something really cool and not done here in Pittsburgh, except for in a couple occasions. Then we have, of course, parking, and we have something in the center of the project called The Current, which is our culinary destination building that will have food and beverage opportunities, both local, national, and really showcase culinary in this community. Other things like grocery stores and service things for the community, dry cleaners, and all of the typical retail that you'd see. But really, the project's going to be, you know, entertainment, exciting, but also blend between family-friendly, exciting, and also a neighborhood. So we're doing a lot.
Yeah,
a lot
I can see that. I highly recommend people go to Pyatt.com to take a look because you have some renderings and details about this. So just in general, I know it's hard to pick a date, but when would people start seeing, you know, break ground, and then when would we see some places that we could visit?
Break ground will happen in spring. It'll take about 12 months to get the site ready. So the next spring will be going vertical, and it's going to take about 18 months after that. So in 27, we'll be, Larry, we'll be riding the Ferris wheel together, buddy.
I'm in, and I'm excited for you guys. And
thank you.
Thank you for sharing some of the details.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Larry.
You got it. Lucas Pyatt, CEO of Pyatt Companies, Esplanade. Do check it out. It's really cool. And if you're one of those people like me that likes to know, hey, do you hear what they're putting down there? This is it, right, Paul?
It's going to be a while before we see something. But what he's describing is not only a destination people would want to go and find out what's going on. And he's, what did he call it? Entertainment?
Yeah.
Yeah. But this sounds like a community as well.
Yeah,
it's like a whole new neighborhood.
And he's right. That will help connect Manchester. And imagine if you're a sports fan to be able to have access to live and stay there. And all that now the North Shore has to offer in addition to what he's developing, too.
Walking distance to the stadiums?
Yeah, it's one
okay,
of the
fine.
biggest. Yeah, and it's on the river.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we should be developing our riverfronts more, and this is the biggest project we've had in a while to do that. So check it out. Piatt, PIATT.com. PetFest 24, presented by Subaru, is back next Saturday, October 27th at the Rockwell Park in the East End. If you've never been, it's really great event space, 9:30 to 4. Your four-legged friends are welcome. We'll have, as you might expect at a PetFest, vendors of all sorts and costume contest, and you can get photos with your pet and Santa. Stop by any Subaru dealer for complimentary tickets. For details, go to kdkradio.com. So, Paul, I know there's going to be a lot of a reaction to the Secret Service report, but it's not the only one. There will be some additional to it. But my question is, I wonder how fast they'll be able to enact what it is they've come up with as suggestions.
Well, the Secret Service falls under the supervision of, or is a branch of, the Department of the Treasury. So I guess they would have to go through those channels,
right,
to make the changes that are being recommended. This panel, by the way, was working under the request of the Department of Homeland Security. So that's another one. We had one in the Senate. We've had one ongoing in the House right now, which is chaired by Mike Kelly, the congressman from Butler. And now we have this report from DHS. This is one of the many. I would assume we're going to wind up with more than we can probably keep track of. But the recommendation of the Secret Service itself being overhauled, a big overhaul, is, to me, that's the big takeaway from this report.
Right. So we'll get more details. I know, I'm guessing Marty's going to talk to, we have an expert here.
Oh, Ron Layton, yeah.
Ron Layton served four presidents with the Secret Service. He's considered to be a expert in a number of areas, including cybercrime. I mean, he's a really smart guy.
Well, he knows where the bones are buried in that agency, so who better to ask than him about those recommendations?
And I can tell you, when we were here on that Saturday, July 13th, broadcasting through the evening, and when Ron Layton came in, you could see the pain on his face.
Mm-hmm.
It was visible how upset he was with how things were handled. And this is before we really knew in great detail what transpired.
I can't imagine how he felt. I know this much, that when you devote that much energy and those many years to a career with Secret Service, to see something like that happen has got to be devastating.
Yeah, you take pride in the work you do, and obviously it hurts when something, you know, in this case, a man was killed and two other men were shot and grazed by, you know, former President Trump. I mean, it was a horrific day.
Just this week, Larry, the two men who survived, you know, blamed the Secret Service for what happened.
Yeah.
In reports just this week.
So we'll get some additional details coming up on that. What else are people talking about? Well, coming up, the encampment downtown that you had in the newscast, the game plan, they go through a pretty exhaustive process before they decide they're going to remove a tent encampment, even though technically it shouldn't be there in the first place.
You know, I mean, it's not like they get a complaint and then decide to pull the camp. They've been getting complaints for a long time about this camp. Well, it's the longest existing camp in the downtown area, down there on Grant Street next to the Parkway East.
I guess the verbiage is decommissioning a camp comes only as, quote, the last resort.
And I thought that was the most interesting thing to me about that story, is the idea of the last resort. It's like they keep the camp up and running as long as possible until it's no longer possible. It seems to be what they're saying, Larry.
Yeah, so we're going to get some clarity on that coming up right after the news at 9:30, because we have other places where there are encampments.
Yes.
And Marty and his Get Marty partner, Patrick, have detailed this in videos and photographs over the last, actually, few years.
Well, very well documented, including in the last 12 months.
Yeah, so we'll keep you posted on that here in just a few minutes. And then get ready for the weekend. And we kind of joked about it, but everywhere I went yesterday, even people... A couple strangers asked me, "Hey, Lair, who's going to play quarterback Sunday?" I can't believe. I know our partners at The Fan, which is all sports. It's all they talk about, right?
Yeah.
They spent the entire day yesterday, morning, noon, and night, just talking about basically one subject.
Yeah, I agree. I tuned in and out myself a little bit just to see what was the prevailing mood. I would say this, Larry. It's one of the few safe topics there is that's of interest to people in Pittsburgh, by and large. I mean, you can't talk about what can't you talk about these days? There's a list that's growing of subjects you don't bring up, right?
Yes.
So you're looking for safe things to talk about, and even mentioning the Steelers can be upsetting to some people who don't like sports.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
But overall,
I mean,
you know, it's a talking point. It's what people can safely discuss.
Well, let's be honest. In this town, Steelers is news.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, no, we don't spend all day talking about details and X's and O's, but you can't help. I mean, it's what people are talking about.
Let's see if the night before a late game and the Steelers win in overtime and someone who didn't get to stay up or didn't see the game wakes up to our station or is on their way to work listening to our station, we have an obligation to tell them what the score was and what happened.
We got to tell you. All right, that said, just one quick soundbite from Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin about statistics. You know, you hear people talking about this all the time. They're throwing stats at you. Here's what Tomlin said. This was one of my big takeaways from his weekly press conference.
Stats are often for losers. It's comfort food when you take an L.
Where does he come up with these
stats
things?
Stats are often for losers. It's comfort food when you take an L. Translation is they're meaningless and you can't comfort yourself after a loss.
No, that's true.
A loss is a loss, and fortunately the Steelers were able to win big in Las Vegas with basically a home crowd. And then Sunday night, the Jets come to town. Aaron Rodgers, I wonder if he goes into one of those wigwams, you know, where he goes sweat lodge. He's into all that stuff.
Yeah, he's some strange practices there. Yeah.
So if you see a sweat lodge on the North Shore, you'll know what it is. It's Aaron Rodgers' house. And we'll check in with Marty Griffin coming up in just a few minutes. And right now, via video, you can see on the radio, kdkradio.com, our streaming. We're going to introduce you to, she is the Assistant Director of Public Safety and the Head of the Office of Community Health and Safety. And Camila, help me with your last name.
My last name is a product of being Latina and marrying a Yinzer. So it's a Latina and a Polish name mixed together. So it's Alarcon Chilecki.
All right. Well, that's great. Married to a Yinzer. We appreciate you coming on this morning. I know this is a very sensitive subject for a lot of different reasons, but the vernacular is decommission one of the tent camps in the city. So let's talk about the one that as of 5 o'clock today, the people who have been living there and hanging out there must vacate. Where exactly is this spot?
Yeah, this is a camp on Grand Street, and it's, I think, the most prominent one that you can see when you're coming into the city. It has had probably at some point like 10 tents, but it's right on Grand Street when you're turning onto Fort Pitt Boulevard.
Yeah, I've seen that. And you describe this as decommissioning only happens as a last resort. So what got it to this point?
Right. So this is a camp that we have been working, trying to support for almost a year and have really increased our services in the past 6 months to ensure that we could support the residents living there with trash collection services. I have two teams in my office. That one is an unhoused outreach group that will go there every single day. And then I have the call response unit, which will check on them on a weekly basis, trying to get people connected to housing, people connected to recovery services, people connected to different street medicine, whatever they might need. So we've been really trying to support this camp. I know from the police side, they have seen an increase of criminal activity and drug activity. At one point, we were getting from the residents within the camp that work really closely with us, really concerning reports about human trafficking and sexual violence against women, and larger scale of drug dealing and drug distribution. So it finally got to a point where, as I said, decommissioning is the last resort, but where these criminal activities were really affecting not only the residents living there, but also the community at large. Additionally, with the human waste and garbage, that can really pose a public health risk for the people living in the camp, but also the neighbors of the buildings surrounding the camp.
How many camps are within the city limits at last count?
We work with different places that might be considered encampments. I would say that we currently have a couple of encampments along the two trails, and then a couple of camps that have always historically existed in the city for, I would say, like decades. But I would just say that total number of homeless people in Allegheny County, from the different outreach numbers and the count that the county does, we have between 150 and 200 people who are unhoused. So that's not like an extreme number if we compare it to similar cities who have, like Seattle, like 10,000 homeless people, who Seattle is a similar city to us, or Philadelphia. So. And it's a manageable number.
When this encampment is decommissioned today at 5 o'clock, don't they just go to another place? Or is there help with them finding a place?
Yes. So we have offered, there were 12 people. We've been really collaborating with the county to do early morning calls to really see how many people are there, because there's a lot of fluctuation of people coming in and coming out and determining who's actually living there. There were 12 people who are living there. Every single person got an offer of shelter. I would mention also that 4 out of the people living there have actual housing, and we've been able to get people a single room occupancy, to have accepted shelter beds. So we have been able to connect people to housing service. Allegheny Link has been at the camp Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, doing assessments, doing intakes, so that people could either go into the shelter of their choice or into single room occupancy, or make sure that they're getting their housing case manager from whatever housing list they are.
Mela, what do you tell the business owners who are nearby that say, look, this has been going on a long time, this affects our customers, and we don't want people frightened to come, you know, to our businesses for service or products?
Yes, we work closely with the businesses and the hotels in the surrounding area. So I have shared my own personal number if they ever need anything, if they ever have any concern. Commander Novacell has been also doing amazing work outreaching there, increasing patrol. I would like to mention that there's an important distinction, and that we've seen specifically in this camp occur, that a lot of people that you wouldn't expect are coming into the camp to purchase drugs that are not unhoused. So I know that sometimes there's a perception that unhoused people bring these criminal activities. It's really the bad actors coming into the camps and victimizing the people. And people are coming that you wouldn't even expect coming in and out of the camps to engage in this criminal activity. So I think it's important to separate those two things.
Camelia Alarcón-Chalecki, who is the Assistant Director of Public Safety and the head of the Office of Community Health and Safety, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much.
Coming up right after the news with Paul Rasmussen, Marty Griffin.
I forgot my Uncrustable.
You
kind of depressed.
You've got like a,
you know, those Uncrustables.
Routine.
They have the, they got the friggin',
yeah, I love them.
Love
peanut
them.
Butter and grape jelly.
Yeah, someone could stop by here with
them.
They
serve. Stop.
What?
They serve those.
We got people out there just driving around with Uncrustables. Just stop by and give me a.
It's Incrustable, not Uncrustable.
Is it
Uncrustable?
Yes.
All right, don't get
Come
angry
on, Larry.
About it.
With all due respect to them cleaning up the 10,
I knew
whatever
you were listening
doing,
to that going.
That's the fourth time this year, and there's at least 400 downtown, with all due respect. And she seems like a very nice woman and professional and has a lot going on, and that's fine. But the big picture, brother, and you kind of alluded to it, and this is an American crisis. This isn't just here. Is that they can move the homeless folks wherever the hell they want, but the homeless folks are coming back because they got nowhere to move to. And, Larry, as we've discussed for years now, they have mental illness, alcoholism, and drug addiction. And there are no beds and no help. So all you're doing, bro, is you're putting the garbage in the can. You're dumping the can somewhere else. Not suggesting these folks are garbage. But
it's a shell game.
It's like the tide, man. It always comes in. And it's unfortunate. Look, they're trying, but it ain't working. And what will work is what your boy Pyatt said, and I'm going to try and snag him tomorrow, is that new development, new growth, new population downtown will make that easier because there will be more revenue to do other things. I hope.
Well, that's why I always applaud, you know, those forward thinkers to put their money where their mouth is and do these kind of things. This will be the biggest development on the river in a long time.
Yeah, it's cool. The stuff with Harris on Fox. Here's the beauty of interviews. It's like a restaurant. Send 20 people to a restaurant. Half of them like it, half of them don't. And they're very subjective. Everyone likes home cooking. So the people that don't like her say she sucked last night. The people that like her say she was wonderful. It's kind of the game. We're burnt out on it. We're ready to vote. Let's roll. Come on, man. And my boy, Ron Layton, on this Secret Service implosion. He called this. He said this is going to happen. But what does it mean to your average Joe? And to protecting these men and women like Harris, like Trump, like J.D. Vance, and like Larry Richard, who's out there every day working it with Bob Pompiani.
The Pomp, man. He's the king.
Pomping is easy.
Yeah, they say it ain't easy.
Where the hell's he come up with that crap? Anybody out there have an Uncrustable? It's really all I care about right now.
Uncrustables.
I got nothing.
They serve them like candy to
the jocks.
Football player.
Yeah,
oh,
they
yeah.
like six at a time.
Yeah, grab those.
I just want one.
Do they have them in the machine? I'll buy you one.
Wow. Big shot. Hey, off the top, this ridiculous, disgusting theft of this memorial. This Jewish memorial from Alderdice. Larry, who the hell does this kind of thing, man? What's going on in America? What motivates someone who's that dark? Seriously.
Great question.
Let's find. And, hey, Bill Artman, the CEO of Giant Eagle, is coming on live at 11:30. We're going to give away a lot of turkeys. Kind of cool.
Nice.
My man Bill.